On this episode of the Endurance Hour podcast, mastering open water swimming, swim gear and swimming drills, and how to avoid and fix swimmer's shoulder. The Endurance Hour podcast starts right now. Let's dive into episode 147 of the Endurance Hour podcast. You like what I did there? Dive in. Yep. Talk about swimming today. Mastering open water swimming. Are you good at that? It's kind of hard to really master open water swimming if you don't have access to a body of water besides a pool. And that's not really open water swimming. That's lane swimming. And you can always see the bottom usually. And that's one of the scary things about open water swimming. You can't see the bottom. It's hard to sight. So Wendy Mader, who's a specialty coach when it comes to swimming, T2Coaching.com, T2Coaching.com, is going to have a nice little talk with us about mastering open water swimming. Greg Gallagher is going to talk about swim gear and drills. He's going to point out about three or four different pieces of swimming gear that you might want to add to your swim bag coming up this season, and how to avoid and fix what Dr. Brian Mather calls swimmer's shoulder. I thought maybe just break up the swim strokes, but he has some solutions and suggestions on how to avoid and fix this in the future. So let's go ahead and kick things off with T2 coaching coach Wendy Mader talking about mastering open water swimming.
This is a big factor because we're in the pool almost, you know, 3-4 times a week, and then we have to go on race day in the open water with thousands of our new friends. What are the things you tell your athletes on getting over some of the fears of open water swimming?
Well, there's a few, probably three or four most common fears. Number one, cold water. For me, cold water is anything that's under 65. But more importantly, if you do an early season race and the water's like 58 or, you know, below 60, it's very breathtaking. So cold water is the biggest number one, I would say, fear. Number two is taking that plunge. And it's brown. You don't see a line. You don't see anything. If you've never experienced that beforehand, it's scary. I mean, even for me, 24 years ago at my first triathlon, collegiate athlete diving in open water, I swam as fast as I could because I didn't like it. Number three is that not having the lane line. And, you know, I take athletes out, you know, just about 10 or 15 yards from the shore. But because it's still a big body of water, even though they're close to shore, there's no lane line enclosing them. So that sparks some fear. And I think the fourth thing, most common fear, is the bodies and getting kicked and punched. And, you know, just really, how do you deal with that? So let's go back to number one, the cold water. I like to do at least a 10-minute water acclimatization where I have athletes get in, get out, get in, get out, get in and out. At least four times. You know, the first time is waist deep, the second time is shoulder deep, the third time is they take the plunge, get out again, because that getting out, their body temperature is warming up. They're getting warm in the wetsuit with their body temperature, so that cold water is not so cold every time they get in. So by that fourth or fifth time, they're ready to take the plunge and actually do some warming up. It's all about breath control, bobbing. You know, go back to when you learned how to bob when you were 6 years old. That's definitely a must, even as an adult in open water. Even if the water's warm, you got to catch your breath. Just keep telling yourself to relax. Then going back to not being able to see anything, I think you get over that just by practicing in open water, experiencing on a repetitive basis. Oh yeah, I can't see anything. Some lakes are more murkier than others, so it just depends where you're going to swim. As far as getting used to swimming with bodies, a tight swim start, again, I think that's a lot of an experience thing. I always tell everyone I coach, it's someone's got to start in the middle, but it doesn't have to be you. I mean, I look back at every Ironman, I'm in front row and center, and I look back and I'm scared. I'm like, oh my God, what if all these people swim on top of me? What am I going to do? It's never happened, but it still goes through my head. You know, the best thing to do, especially if you're a beginner and inexperienced, you just want to either start in the back and let your wave go, but know that's the wave behind you could get you, or you want to start kind of on the edge and kind of swim on an angle. If you're a beginner, you're not going to win the race. Don't worry about it. Don't try to win it in the swim. The most important thing is just staying calm and relaxed and getting getting some open water swim practices with your local tri group or your local community, because I know here in Colorado, there's so many opportunities to get used to the open water swimming. So it's just practice.
One example a coach told me once is that if you are, you know, limited to a pool, is maybe swim real close to somebody in a pool and practice bumping side to side so you can work on your balance and that body contact.
Yeah, I've had master's classes that I've coached. You know, you got 20 athletes, you go in one lane. So you're in one lane with the lane lines and you're all trying to hold onto the wall. And I just say, ready, set, go. And that's actually a fun exercise. Also swimming with your eyes closed. I've done it. I've recommended it. I don't know how successful it is, but getting in the water and swimming with your eyes closed, because then you really can't see anything. Then you know how straight or not you're going to swim. That's kind of a fun exercise. I've also had groups take out the lane lines in the pool that they practice in. So it's a little bit more bigger body of water. And then they practice in that as well.
I know you're so experienced when it comes to swimming. And what's your take on practicing breathing every other, or left side, right side, because some people are pretty dominant on one side?
So that's a good one. Sighting in open water is important. So I want to back up and talk about sighting, because sighting, I always teach alligator eyes. So whether you're a left side breather or a right side breather doesn't matter, because when you sight, you're looking up. So obviously, if the buoys are to your right, if you breathe right, you're going to see them more frequently. But because you're sighting and you're looking up at that goggle level, I'm not one that says bilateral breathing is going to help you sight better or not. The thing that I like to stress is look up and look up frequently, and then breathe to the side that you're most comfortable breathing. I know for me, I'm a bilateral breather in the pool, but more frequently a dominant right side breather in open water. But if you're sighting correctly and you're sighting frequently, it doesn't matter.
You know, I have a tendency to veer one side, and I'm just horrible when it comes to open water. Would you suggest maybe every 4 or every 6 strokes before you do that sight? Or what's kind of a range that you should go for?
Every 2.
Really? That quickly?
So I recommend that, and that's how I coach, every 1-2 until you round the first buoy. Because the worst thing is being turned around. The current might turn you around. The worst thing is being turned around and you haven't even gotten to the first buoy yet. Usually once you're past the first buoy, there's no more sun glare. You're in your space. There's not as much bodies. And then you know you're on track. So then you can go into your normal, regular, somewhat kind of breathing pattern. But I know my breathing pattern in open water is tends to be 4 or 5 strokes. But I still sight before every breath in open water, the whole entire way. I just realized that this year, how frequently I sight. But I'm a very straight shot. I don't go off course at all, ever.
I've got a snorkel, a pool buoy. I've got paddles. And what's the last thing I have? Fins. There you go. Those are some of the things I keep, along with a swim cap and two or three pairs of Blue 70 swim goggles. That's what I have in my swim bag when I go to the gym each day. What do you have? Do you carry anything extra with you? Well, coming up now, we have Greg Gallagher talking about some swim gear that you might want to incorporate if you haven't already, how to use them and why they're important, and some of the drills that you can do by incorporating different elements of swim gear in your swim workouts. Here it is. I love this because the off season is upon us and people are going to be in the pool working on their swim technique, but you have some swim tools that people can incorporate into their training. Let's kick it off with some swim paddles.
Well, swim paddles are, they're used for upper body strength. You know, you got to work on that upper body. That's the most important thing in the swim. You know, you got to be able to be strong in the swim. So there's different paddles are color-coded. So say a smaller paddle might be a green paddle. The larger paddle for maybe a collegiate swimmer or a pro triathlete, somebody who has a lot of experience, could be like the red or blue. You kind of got to choose your paddle accordingly to your ability. You don't want to go, hey, I'm going to go get a set of paddles, I have never used them, and jump into a set of red paddles. That will put too much stress on your shoulders and you'll end up with shoulder injuries, shoulder problems. So choose accordingly. I always favor on, hey, if you're just starting out with them, go with a small set and get used to them and build from there. Right now, I think I'm using a yellow, and that's right about the middle size, a medium size.
And incorporating a paddle workout into your workout, is this something that should be in shorter durations, or can you do a long set with paddles?
Well, you know, as again, when you're first starting out with these, if you haven't used them in the past, start out with short stuff. Start out with, you know, a couple hundred. You can build up. There's a one of my sets I do is like a 500 paddle and 500 pull. You can always go up from there. I've done 1,000 paddle, 1,000. So, again, you got to build into it or you're going to stress your shoulders.
And one thing about these paddles, which I do love paddles, is it, in addition to working in your upper body, it helps you with your form, with your entry. When you do your follow through, if your hand's not in the right position, these paddles teach you
what you're doing wrong.
To do it right, yeah.
Yes, and yeah, because paddles have a strap on them. Some of them are strapless, some of them have a strap. So you have a strap around your finger. I don't use the strap around your wrist. I think that's kind of a cheater thing. Because when you get your follow through and you've gone all the way through your stroke and you're pulling your hand out to do your recovery, if you shorten that stroke, you're going to pull the paddle off your hand when you pull your hand out of the water. So that's a good indicator. If you have that strap on your shoulder, on your wrist, then it's not going to work properly. So I like to go one strap around one finger and, go from there. Yeah. As you enter in, you can feel the paddle change your hand position, push all the way through and into your recovery.
You mentioned something about sets. One would be a paddle set. You also mentioned pull. What other kind of devices do you have in mind?
Like a pull buoy. Pull buoy is going to take out the you're not going to kick with the pull buoy, so it's going to help your body position. It's going to bring your hips up, and it's going to keep your legs from having to kick, and it's going to totally work on your upper body strength. So you're kind of taking out some of the things you don't want to think about. You don't want to keep thinking about kicking or, oh, my hips high. I'm just going to focus on my upper body and my hand position. So pull buoy is a great tool.
And you can
combine the two. So you can do a pull buoy without a paddles. You can do your paddles and then you can combine them both so that you use them together.
And this is something you want to be careful about not doing too much of, because I know it's great for keeping your body position higher, but you can get too reliant on just doing pulls.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been to the pool and seen people swim with a pull buoy the whole entire swim. And that's not teaching your body to have that core strength to keep your hips high in the water. When you use it, you'll get the feel of it, mm-hmm. and you'll know what it feels like. So when you take the pull buoy out, you try to simulate that same feel.
What's another swimming tool idea you have in mind?
Another thing to go along with the pull buoy and the paddles is an ankle strap. Now the ankle strap, what that does is it immobilizes your legs during the swim, so you're not kicking. So the less your lower body is working, the more your upper body is working, which then builds the strength. So, and again, if you use that strap, you're not kicking, your hips and your legs will sink. So then you got to engage that core and got to get those legs up, or you'll just be dragging. So it's definitely, it's going to work on your upper body strength and your core. And it's an interesting piece of equipment. I use it occasionally. If you have a great core strength, you can use it without a pull buoy. That becomes difficult. You change your stroke a little bit because you have no chance to kick. So, yeah.
So that's three. We got the paddle, the pull buoy, and ankle strap. Anything else on the list?
Well, the new thing that's came out over the last couple of years is this. They're called sim shorts, and what they are is they're a neoprene short. They're made out of the same material as a wetsuit. They look like a jammer, so they're a little longer. And that's a great tool because you can get those on and off in the pool. So instead of using a pull buoy, you could use those sim shorts. So it's giving your body the position it would be in a wetsuit, so you can practice, let's say, how it would feel swimming in a wetsuit in the pool without having to hold the whole entire suit on. You mm-hmm. you get a whole entire suit on in the pool and you overheat. So it's a great tool. You can use it instead of the pool buoy, and it's much easier. So if you're using them, you can kick, and if you're doing flip turns, you haven't got to worry about that pool buoy coming out. So the new swim shorts, I've used them a few times. It's something I have in my bag. You find the time and place to use them, and it seems like a great, great new tool.
And all of these things are, you put them into drills before your normal set, or are these part of every part of your workout? Maybe 500 paddle, 500 pole buoy, 500 straps, 500 swim shorts, and then do you maybe do something completely free?
Well, you could do, let's say you did a 500 pole, a 500 paddle, 500 pole paddle, mm-hmm. and then you do a 500 free without anything. Mm-hmm. So you've worked on your body position, you worked on your, you know, some of your entry, and then you try it without anything and see if you can simulate what it actually is supposed to feel like.
It's a good way to feel the difference, isn't it?
Oh, sure. Yeah. If you swim, say you swim a 500 with your swim shorts, you're just out swimming and then you take your swim shorts off and you swim it out, well, you're going to feel a difference. And that's when you got to say, okay, I got to get my core engaged and get the hips up. So yeah.
This is one of the most challenging of our three sports, isn't it?
It is the most challenging and the most technique, really, because there's so much involved in swimming. So yeah, it's something that you need to spend a good amount of time on in this off season. You know, it's the shortest part of the triathlon, but it's definitely something you need to really focus on.
And final question, how often would you suggest someone be in the pool each week, even if it's for a half hour?
You know, four times is a great number. You can get in a decent swim, you can do some shorter swims, and then maybe one of them could be a longer swim. But, you know, to keep yourself steady and keep yourself with not losing your technique and really focus on stuff, four times a week is really a good idea. If you're a weak swimmer, you do five times a week, but maybe your sets are a little bit shorter, so you're not stressing your shoulders out more than you should. But I would say four times a week.
Try to keep a minimum there to get a feel for the water. Otherwise, you kind of lose it.
You start to lose it. Yeah, you get out of the water for, you know, a couple, 3-4 days, and you get back into it. You're going to start, oh, well, I'm not feeling the same. So the four times is good.
All right. Great tips and great ideas. Thank you. Have you ever used electrical stimulation for those sore muscles after a long workout, whether it's running, cycling, or swimming? I have. I usually use it on my legs because those are my most trouble areas, calves specifically, but also quads. But I have, and this has worked for me in the past. I've put that electric stim, it's a Compex that I use, over my shoulder before a swim workout. It was kind of an experiment to see if it warmed my shoulder up because, you know, it's firing electrical pulses into your muscles and firing them to warm them up. And then you do that after a workout to kind of relax them or to fatigue them. And then you have some sort of recovery aspect to these Compex electrical stimulation boxes. It's a whole other thing. In fact, I have a video on how to use one of these Compex on my YouTube channel. But my point being is we all have some experience with shoulder pain after a long, hard swim, especially if we're using paddles that might not be the right size or we overdo it. Let's say you did 2,000 paddle swim, and yeah, your shoulders are going to hurt pretty bad afterwards if you really put a lot of muscle into it. So Dr. Brian Mather, the owner of the Spokane Chiropractic and Sports Injury Clinic out of Spokane, is going to talk about now how to avoid and fix swimmer's shoulder. You see a lot of athletes from all different sports. Today we're talking about swimmers and what type of ailments that you see most often happen or injuries related to swimming.
I would say the predominant injury in swimmers is shoulder problems. We see a lot of shoulder pain. Swimmers are obviously training long hours in the pool, and they have a tendency to get a lot of overuse problems in the shoulder. So we spend quite a bit of time working with swimmers, honestly, in their dry land training. I think that's one of the big issues. Competitive swimmers or even triathletes, they spend all their time in the water. And if they spend a little bit more time on land training those muscle groups appropriately, I think we would see much less injuries in the water from that training. The other thing in swimmers that we see as a close second is probably sacroiliac joint pain from kicking. You're pushing against the resistance of the water, and there's so much repetition. You're pushing off the wall. If your pelvis is not functioning the way it's supposed to, it affects your kick. It affects how well you swim, and that's a pretty simple problem to address that can get your swim stroke and your times way more efficient.
It is very hard to avoid the repetition of swimming in the shoulders. What do you recommend to athletes who are in the pool four times a week, an hour and a half a day?
It's doing that dry land training to make sure that you have a solid base of proper function. One of the common things we see in swimming is we see a term that's called scapular dyskinesis. So basically what that means is your shoulder blade, which is your scapula, it is the foundation of stability in the shoulder. And if you lose control of that scapula and your body quits doing the job it's supposed to do, then there is a cascade of compensations throughout the shoulder, and it doesn't allow the shoulder blade to stabilize. So as you pull your arm down through that water, you're overloading your rotator cuff muscles and you're breaking things down, causing an overuse injury. So a lot of our swimmers, we spend quite a bit of time doing dry land training to provide the proper foundation of stabilization in the shoulder so they can endure the hours and the repetition in the water when they're training.
I know one thing that you're a proponent of and a champion of is the kinesio tape. And is this something that you would recommend to a swimmer who has overuse problems on their shoulder?
Yes, it can be very effective while we're addressing their overuse problems so that we don't have to pull them out of the pool and make them take time off. We can get them continuing to train by using the kinesio tape to the tape will allow them to utilize the proper muscles that they're not able to do on their own. So while they're doing their dry land rehab, we can keep them in the pool with the tape on. And the great thing about kinesio tape is it stays on when it gets wet. So we can put you in the pool for 3 hours and that tape will stay on there usually without any issues.
I imagine having overuse issues in my shoulders for swimming, but does that happen a lot in terms of someone seeking help for it, or is that just one of those, it's a rare case?
No, we see quite a bit of shoulder pain that comes in from people doing too much yard work to lifting too much stuff. One of the common things is people will come in and they'll complain of their arm falling asleep at night when they lay on their side. And often we trace that back to a shoulder problem, and it changes the position your shoulder's sitting in. It slides it forward, and then you lay on that and you compress all the blood flow going down into that arm. And you'd be surprised at the number of people out there that go, oh, I thought that was normal that my arms were supposed to fall asleep in the middle of the night. It's not normal. And there are definitely some very simple exercises that we can do to try to remedy that situation for people.
Now, when it comes to swimming, there's different strokes, whether it's backstroke, butterfly, freestyle. Sometimes in our training, we like to use paddles. Are paddles a concern in your point of view for too much stress on the shoulders?
If you've got a solid foundation of stability, no. If you don't have a solid foundation and you're an injury waiting to happen, then you add that higher level of stress, you're going to find you have that injury a lot quicker. So again, it comes back to dry land training, which is an area especially for triathletes. They don't do enough of it, in my opinion, at least the people that I work with. And I think if with proper dry land training, we wouldn't see as many overuse injuries in the pool.
All right, time to dry off after today's episode about open water swimming, swim gear and drills, and how to avoid and fix swimmer's shoulder. See what I did right there? Another swimming theme. Yeah. You're laughing right now, aren't you, on your run or your ride? That was so corny. That's okay. That's all right. Episode 147, thanks to Wendy Mader, Greg Gallagher, and Dr. Brian Mather again for joining us today and sharing their wisdom when it comes to the discipline of swimming for us triathletes or just swimmers, period. Thanks very much. Coming up next week on episode 148, I know it all depends on when you listen to this, I guess. I don't want to date myself too much here by, you know, hey, it's December blank or it's January, you know, blah, blah, blah. Next episode, we're going to talk about planning for your first Ironman. Some race day travel tips, which can be regardless of your distance there. Back-to-back racing. I talked to Kelly Phil now out of the East Coast, North Carolina, South Carolina, about how wise is it to attempt a back-to-back, in this case, a 70.3 race. She's a professional triathlete. She's never done that before, if that gives you any hint on what if you should even try that. And then some post-Ironman recovery tips. See how we did that? Another themed show. about Ironman racing, recovering, types of races, and race day travel. I love it. I hope you love it. That's episode 148 next week. Until next time, I'm Dave Erickson. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week of training or racing. I'll talk at you next time.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young.